From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Joining me in the wild outback of Australia is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello. I am Jazz Balk this week.
And John is not able to be with us this week. He went to the store to get his laptop fixed, and a guy named Rudy Giuliani picked it up. And now, you know, it's at the center of this big controversy. Like, people think John is Hunter Biden. It's very weird.
See, John wasn't smart enough to realize that the shadow we figure had black hair dye sweat dripping down his face, and he still didn't realize it was Giuliani. Yeah. Have you seen those pictures?
Yeah, where he's got the hair dye running down his face.
Oh, God. He's as bold as an egg anyway. Why the fuck bother?
I don't understand why, you know, you're Rudy Giuliani. Why are you coloring your hair? I don't understand. I don't understand.
He's trying to look 75 instead of 76.
Sex symbol? I don't get it. But joining us for this week's episode is, first time on the show, a friend, musician, guitar player, and just all around bad guy, Daniel Kiesler. Say hello, Dan.
Hello, everybody.
And the reason I had you on the show is because we're talking about the Killing Joke documentary, The Death and Resurrection Show from 2013, directed by Sean Pettigrew. And you're the guy who said, you're the guy who kept bugging me saying, hey, you have to listen to this band, Killing Joke.
I'm always trying to spread the good word about Killing Joke.
Yes. You were always like, hey, listen to Killing Joke. Nothing. And I was like, where do I start, Daniel? And you go, anywhere.
Better fucking listen to Killing Joke.
Dude, you're like, you go, nothing they do sucks. It does.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. It's going to be strange, but it's going to be good.
You know, I there was a teacher at work, and I said, hey, you should probably check out this band Killing Joke. And he sends me an email on a Friday, on a Saturday, he sends me an email and he goes, I'm listening to Killing Joke. This band is awesome. He goes, I'm listening to I Am the Virus. And he goes, this song just captures how I feel right now in the current year, all the anger and rage, except the stuff about 9/11. Because it has like a 9/11 truth burst in there. Where they said 9/11 was fake or something. But he just goes, except the part about 9/11. That part, no.
Yeah. Jazz Coleman likes to say things.
He does like to say. He says a lot of things.
A lot of weird things, too. Yeah. Most of the time, it'll make you wonder if he's capable of being out in the world with other people.
I honestly don't. You know, okay, so one time, Stu, I don't know if you've seen this, but, you know, I know you have very strong opinions on this guy, but one time and I were hanging out watching the Ministry documentary.
Which one?
Which I'm sure
I've heard you talk about it on your show.
Yeah, I've brought it up many times on this show.
Which documentary?
And what's it called, Daniel?
I think it's just called The Fix.
Yeah, it's The Fix. Yeah.
Oh, the Ministry and one?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, you watch that and you go, I don't know how Al Jorgensen functions in the world.
Yeah,
like, right. I don't understand how he's able to record a record. I don't get it.
That documentary, because I only watched it twice, once and then with you that one time we watched it, and I never really cared to watch it again because I love Ministry. Al's a creep. I mean, it's not like, you know, that's not everybody knows that shit. But
well, you know, the thing
that
is,
documentary made me feel so gross.
Should we turn this off? I was like, I feel like I'm participating in something disgusting.
I feel like I'm watching what may end up being a snuff movie.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is as well, I mean, it's funny you bring it up because everybody knows Al Jorgensen's got a very strong heroin habit. He claims he's a user, but it's a habit. Three weeks back, a friend of mine who I've known since 97 died of a heroin overdose. And he'd been a user for, mid-90s. But it eventually got him at 48. So, no one's immune to this shit, so, strange. This is talking about heroin use. I'm talking about that friend of mine who died a few weeks back. Rest in peace, Jake.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, how you think, okay, 20-something years. I've known him since 97, and 25, 26 years. I think even longer he'd been doing it, and then in the end it just got him.
Did he stop using and then go back to it?
Look, I hadn't seen him for a few years, but I know in the years I knew him that he tried to give it up, and then I saw him at times, and he was with his then-girlfriend who he got onto heroin, and she died at a young age. It was all a big, big mess, but I saw him trying to kick it, and I'm telling you now, it was like watching that fucking Just One Fix video of those young boys, you know, trying to kick heroin or not having a fix. No, they didn't have a fix of heroin, and you know they're convulsing on the bed. I actually saw him doing that. So,
that's horrible.
That was him trying to get off it. So I don't think he ever got off it. I think he used, but he was never like a junkie that you saw in the street. But he would certainly use, and yeah, like I said, got him at age 48. So,
well, you know, I think movies kind of create this image in our head of what a junkie is, and you know, sometimes they're plenty like a. You know, I remember listening to Dr. Drew, and, you know, there's somebody was talking about, well, my dad was an alcoholic. I mean, he drank all the time. He wasn't an alcoholic. Or like, he was like, do you think that there are people who don't lead seemingly functional lives as alcoholics? I mean, it's the same goes true for drug addiction, you know. Some people are just very good at hiding it and managing it, but eventually it catches up to you.
Oh, I've known a bunch of people that, you know, they seemed all right, you know. And the whole time they were doing something, you know.
Yeah.
But growing up in Tennessee, it was still a lot of meth, but it was a lot of meth for people. And here in New Orleans, it's just the heroin is just awful. I mean,
oh, really?
You know, okay. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I blame Phil Anselmo.
I blame him for everything wrong with just about everything. I blame him for COVID-19. and for fucking whatever his last awful band was.
He's had awful bands. I really like Down, but that's not it.
That's pretty much the last one, it seems like. He just can't do anything worth a shit anymore.
What it is, man, I think your buddy Dick, he said that Phil Anselmo is the Captain D's of heavy metal.
Yeah, sounds like something Dick would say.
I was like, yeah, it sounds about right.
He
has this brand of being this you know, this guy who's like a metal fan, like a Tarantino of metal, like he does metal for metalheads, but not really. I mean, I think Down was that, but other projects like Superjoint and The Illegals are just unlistenable to me. I don't know.
Especially with Superjoint, because that is just noise to me, and you know, and I listen to a lot of black metal and shit like that. And that's just annoying. It sounds like a sawzall.
Yeah.
With the drum beat too.
And like, you know, Hank Williams III is in that, and his like solo metal stuff is just terrible. Like it's
with Ash Jack or something like that.
Yeah.
It is utter dog shit. And I hate it.
It's terrible. Like, you know, he did like country to finance his metal stuff, but his country stuff is way better.
It's his meth habit, or his blue sniffing habit or whatever, because I remember seeing him on that one of those Wild Whites of West Virginia. He was on that and was talking about like huffing pain or some, you know, white trash shit like that. And I was like, yeah, I can totally see this guy. hanging out with Jessica White and huffing glue or gas or whatever the hell it was.
The reason I brought up Al was because, like, jazz seems like a sober version of that to me, where he's super intense and super just there's just something about him that I think being around him would be so overwhelming. I don't think I could handle it.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like one of those guys that you would, you know, want to approach after a show or maybe try to have a beer with. He seems like he would be a lot to deal with.
Yeah, like there's this scene in the documentary where he's talking to Dave Grohl, and
I know the scene.
Dave Grohl, like, Jazz is going on about this esoteric Bible stuff, and it's you know, in the documentary they say Jazz found. He found Jesus, and I was thinking, no, he didn't.
Not what that was.
That's not what that was, because, you know, it's basically he dresses up like a vicar and just talks about, like, conspiracy stuff. It's like if Alex Jones dressed as a priest. It's just, you know, like, but he's going on and on about this, like, esoteric, end-of-the-world stuff in the Bible. And Dave Grohl, who is so laid back and seems to be able to navigate any social situation, just, you can see the gears turning in his head. And then he thinks of something to say that brings it around to something normal.
Yeah, you kind of got to lasso him, it seems like.
Yeah.
You got to steer that ship if you're going to hang out with him, probably.
Yeah, I was going, man, Dave Grohl is, I was thinking his social skills are incredible. Because if Jazz was saying that to me, I would have been like, oh, there you go, or something.
Because I remember that part in it, too, and I just remember kind of getting douche chills watching them like, each other. Because it made me uncomfortable, because I know how I would feel if anytime I've ever had to have someone with that kind of energy around me, I just kind of want to just kind of back away and leave wherever I'm at.
I've been around you when we've had those people with that kind of energy. And you get visibly uncomfortable. Like, you make this face, I can see it in my head now, where you, like, you squint and, like, you have this look like you're smelling, like, poop or something.
Yeah, Alex tells me the same thing. It's apparently pretty obvious when someone's getting on my nerves.
You have zero poker face. It's really funny.
Oh, yeah. It's a problem, and I'm not trying to do anything about it.
So Stu, this, I actually didn't know this documentary even existed, and I like Killing Joke quite a bit, and you brought it up. You were like, hey, let's do this. So how'd you come across it? I didn't even know you were a Killing Joke fan. So
I'd only heard the song The Wait by Metallica, and I actually, it was on that EP, that Garage Days, and I obviously got that when it came out in 87. I'm like, yeah, I don't care much for this song. I enjoyed Helpless more and the Misfit stuff they did, the Green Hell and Last Caress. But something happened. I was just browsing YouTube and Killing Joke turned up. Actually, I think I was watching Metallica videos and it had, like, a recommended, it said Killing Joke The Wait. Oh, the original version, I'll give it a chance. I'm like, wow, this is better. This is way better than what Metallica did. I thought, shit, I really like this a lot. So, and that was via their Vevo channel, so I checked out a few more videos, and then I got to one of their top ones was 80s.
You know, something.
I popped it on, and I went, this is fucking Come As You Are by Nirvana, but before that, because I had to look up and go, this album's 85. Did Nirvana rip this off?
It's a very expensive song.
Yeah. So, and I'm browsing through it more, and then all of a sudden it says trailer for the Death and Resurrection show. I'm like, what is this? And it was a trailer for the documentary, and that's why I said, oh, shit. That's when I contacted you, Hunter, and said, there's this documentary about this band Killing Joke I'm really enjoying. Oh, sorry, I got a couple of albums of theirs on Spotify. I got the first one, I downloaded that, and What's This For, the second one.
Yeah.
And listened to those. After I contacted you that night, I went to work and listened to the first one. Really liked that. Popped on What's This For and liked that even more, actually, because I was like, this is the birth of industrial before... This is ministry before ministry.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I said to myself, shit, this band sounds like they're a bit of a trailblazer. So I delved into them more and then found the documentary on Amazon Prime, and then it's a snowball from there.
Yeah, I got into them because Daniel told me to check them out, and I remember watching the live DVD. I can't remember the name of it.
It's the Death and Resurrection show, isn't it?
No, it's
didn't
like
you watch that one at my house, I think.
Yeah, it's called Let Us Pray or something. It's like,
yeah, I can't remember.
And it's
great,
it's, it opens with communion and it ends with pandemonium, which you know, pandemonium is just that riff and the
crushes. I love it.
Oh man, it's just, you know, it's just, there's nothing like it. And I remember Jordy's playing guitar and he's just sitting there and you go, that man's come here to work.
You're like, job over. He's got a cigarette in his mouth.
You're like, he is here to work.
I mean, it's just another day at work for that guy, man. He's comfortable in it.
But, I think Killing Joke, I think they had a huge influence on industrial. And I also think jazz kind of pioneered, you know, like grindcore and death metal vocals a little bit. I think he had a huge influence on kind of that unclean vocal sound.
Yeah. And it was, you know, like brutally heavy, but you could still understand, you know, his vocals under it. You know, it wasn't, you know, just kind of like your typical, you know, grind stuff.
Yeah, it's not like Corpse Grinder or Chris Barnes or.
Yeah. I've always loved his heavy voice when he does that because it's real clear.
You know who's like that is Burt Bell from Fear Factory.
Yeah.
You know, they covered Millennium, so they're big Killing Joke fan.
Yeah. Yeah, Helmet did a cover too, Requiem, I think. I know Helmet did one. I didn't even know about it until a few weeks ago. I was driving in the truck, and it just kind of popped up on XM. I was like, that sounds like Killing Joke. And looked at it, and I was like, Helmet? All right. So I guess they must have... to cover at some point.
One of my favorite Killing Joke albums is Pandemonium, and I remember getting in the car one time when I was visiting Memphis, and you popped on the song Millennium, and I was going, "Ooh, what's this?" And you were like, "This is Killing Joke," and I was going, "I like."
We're about
this.
To go do some bad stuff.
Yeah. This is how the night begins. Man. Yeah. Helmet did a cover of a Primitive because I have it on disc two of the Absolute Descent album. They have other bands covering them or something. Foo Fighters did a cover of Requiem.
Of course.
But Dave played on their second self-titled record from 2003, so that's why.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Until you told me, I didn't have any idea he did that. I mean, it makes sense, and honestly, if you listen to it after knowing it, it almost sounds like that would be Dave Grohl playing drums on that album.
Oh, yeah. Once you know it's him, it's like, of course.
Yeah, how did I not know that?
Because he has such a distinctive sound.
Yeah, just big and, you know, just... beating the hell out of the drums like Bill Ward or something.
Yes, exactly. That's actually a great way of putting it. Bill Ward.
Yeah, hammer.
You know, in this documentary, it's sort of it was interesting because, you know, one of the key figures early on in it anyway, he's not throughout the film, but is Jimmy Page. And I thought it was really interesting that Jimmy Page was a guy who latched onto this band fairly early on, it seemed, in terms of their sound. And I think it's maybe because they share the sort of esoteric occult interests.
Yeah, the whole magic thing, yeah.
Geometria or whatever. And
I guess. I'm not sure what...
The system jazz has in there is... It's so many different things. It's almost like I don't even know what it is, you know.
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah. And that's the thing about this documentary is, I think they spend a little too much time talking about that stuff because it seems so incomprehensible to me. And I don't, I'm not somebody who's completely ignorant about religious stuff. You know, I've taken a lot of theology classes over the years, and I know what this little thing over here is and that little thing over there is, but it seems so chaotic and confusing that it doesn't seem to have any consistency or, it seems like it's just whatever jazz is interested in at the moment.
Yeah, it seems more like the Jazz Coleman documentary, at least through a lot of it to me anyway. And I almost feel like the other members kind of just need their own documentary.
Like Paul Raven needs a thing on his own, you know. Because was it a student came up to me the other day and he goes, "Mr. Deucing, do you know any albums that have really catchy bass lines?" And I went, "Well, there's a whole record of the most catchy bass lines of all time. It's called Nighttime by Killing Joke."
Yep. That's the one right there.
Yeah. And he went, he listened, and he goes, "Yep. That's exactly what I was looking for."
Oh, yeah. Everything you need right there.
Yes. Yes. Were you about to say something, Stu? I'm sorry.
I was just laughing at the fact they call you Mr. Deucing.
Oh, I know, right? Weird.
That is weird.
But yeah, like, you know, it's just funny though, because the albums with catchy bass lines, you know, that's what I want. And I was going, and I thought about it for a second. I was like, yeah, this one.
Actually,
joke.
You should have pointed that student towards Injustice for All.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Oh, Nate,
that's the meanest shit you could do to a kid.
Yes.
Anybody take your teaching license for doing something like that?
They would have come back and said, "I couldn't hear anything." It's like, it's there. It's prominent. Couldn't you hear it in the mix? What's wrong with you?
Oh, man. I'm just going to gaslight you into thinking that Injustice for All is the greatest bass. Like Jason Newsted just redefined what a bass player is.
The thinnest sounding bass I've ever heard.
Also, any Doors record, to be honest.
You know. Mean. That's mean.
It's like, what's
you send him, send him to Typo Negative, and I guess you can try to figure out if that it's a bass or not.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Typo Negative, I think I ragged him on the last episode or two back, did I?
Hunter, maybe.
Help me out. Yeah.
I feel like they're a band you would make fun of.
Well, surprisingly enough, in the garage, I just got a massive box full of CDs. They just sit there doing nothing. And in there was a Typo Negative album I must have bought back in the late 90s. I just forgot all about it. And what's the one that's got Black Number One in it?
Bloody Kisses. Yeah.
That's the one, yeah. Actually pretty good. I've got to say it was a pretty good album.
Of course it is.
It's a real
negative.
Yeah, it's a that album is hilarious. You know, there's like that
kill
Black
the white
Number
people.
One. It's like, you know, this girl's dying, or like her roots are showing. Die in black.
The video's great too.
Oh yeah, it's so fun.
So I want to suggest another one. I want to actually get suggested another one of theirs to look into. So what do I go for? October Rust.
I'm a nerd for it. World Coming Down is by far my favorite of theirs. Probably one of my favorite albums ever, because it's the most depressing thing I've ever heard in my life. It makes me feel so good for some reason when I listen to it. But that's my favorite one right there. It is downtrodden, but it is awesome.
I love World Coming Down as well. The song White Slavery, just, you know, there's
it's a great
something
song
about
cocaine addiction.
Yeah.
I knew a thing or two.
So I say Pepsi Generation, like, watch your money blow away oh so quick. If you want to kill yourself, Coke is it.
Yeah. There's so many just kind of buried jokes in their songs. You know, it's so, I love it.
Pete Steele, just his sense of humor was something else. World Coming Down is great. I like, because I'm a Catholic, I love Dead Again, because there's so much Catholicism in that album.
Yeah, that's when he kind of came back into the fold, I think, on that when it was about the time that album came out.
Yeah, it was. And there's a lot of very explicitly Catholic lyrics, but it still has that typo negative sense of humor. It's also the only is it the only record or one of the few that has actual drum sounds? Because they used a drum machine for most of their records. Or is it the only one with Johnny Kelly where you can actually where he's actually playing the drums?
Yeah, it was the last one that they recorded was the only one that had Johnny Kelly playing on it. Between him and Sal, it was drum sounds, which I didn't even know for years. I just accidentally came across that online somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say for your next, like, October Rust is good if you like goth stuff, but it is.
It's one for the ladies right there.
Yes, that's exactly. Okay. It's more geared towards goth chicks, you know, and it's good. I like it. It's funny. It's definitely Peter going for the female audience.
Yeah, I think you got it too back then.
All right. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's move on.
But so Death and Resurrection Show. So what I was saying earlier about the sort of esoteric stuff about the band. One thing I did not know was that they were convinced the world was going to end, so they moved to Iceland, and they didn't tell Youth about it. Youth was their first bass player. They have two bass players they pinball back and forth between. Now it's just Youth, but Paul Raven was the other one.
You treat that dude like it was Macaulay Culkin at Home Alone. Left his ass behind.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, they just didn't bother to tell me. I just moved to Iceland. But it's those scenes where they're talking to the people in Iceland about, like, getting struck by lightning and, you know, lightning going through this girl's, the water around this girl's body, and it's, you know, she was struck by lightning in Jazz Coleman's presence twice. And there's all this just kind of these occult asides where I'm kind of like, yeah, what about the music?
Yeah, enough of your crazy shit. How about let's talk about the music a little bit.
Exactly. Like, I wanted a little bit more about some of the records. You know, they talk about Nighttime a lot, because obviously that's that was the album that made them a lot of money. And they sort of talk about how Brighter Than a Thousand Suns went a certain direction. They talk about the second self-titled record, a little bit about Hosannas and, you know, them coming back together. But it seemed more, I don't think a documentary about a band should limit itself to the records necessarily. This documentary seemed to more focus on all the weird stuff surrounding the band, I guess.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like to me.
And just sort of Jazz's weird personality, and, like, he's going to go to New Zealand and, you know, do a classical record and, you know, have this woman sing at the national anthem at the football game and get everybody angry because she speaks in Maori or whatever. You know? It seemed more like it was about jazz, I guess. What were some thoughts you had about that?
The fact it had Marys in it disappointed me. I was like, a fast forward that part. Any part in New Zealand was fast forward. I was like, no thanks.
What timestamp here? Okay.
There's nobody in New Zealand listening. Hasn't been for 10 years, so don't worry. They haven't even got iPods yet, so...
So something I've noticed about people from New Zealand... you know, my wife is a Les Mills instructor, and so Les Mills is a fitness company, and they do, my wife teaches their weightlifting class, Body Pump. But so we get these videos where she has to learn whatever the new release is. And something I've noticed about people from New Zealand is that they have funny nicknames for each other.
Yep.
So this guy will come out and go, "Hoi, I'm Glenn, and this is Leela, Booba, Zeebee, Doobie, and Dive.
Yep.
And the guy, and Dave is the one guy from America who's like,
You can tell like the
language
New Zealand
of Middle Earth or something.
You can tell the New Zealanders because they always have that blank look on their face, like they just shit their pants. So,
and speaking of New Zealand, you know, Jazz is searching for this island. He's searching for an island where it's going to be the one place. It's going to be like the new Garden of Eden when the world ends.
And talking about all that, he's kind of like the David Attenborough, but on a shitload of LSD.
No, I was going to say, do you think he does a lot of drugs? I can't remember from the movie if they allude to that or not.
Well, I went through it twice, and when I first watched it, I was like, when are they going to talk about drugs? Because there's no fucking way these dudes aren't doing drugs. There's just no way. They're crazy as shit. And then eventually, I think Youth said something talking that like alluded to like drug use. That was kind of it. And I'm like, you know, I'd kind of like to know what it was, just my own curiosity, because I'm pretty sure there's a shitload of hallucinogens, if I had to guess. For Jazz, probably a lot of coke. I don't know.
Well, Jazz seems like he's coked out of his mind. But yeah, like these, you know, when I kind of suspect that maybe they cut a lot of the drug stuff to make you sort of think that these guys were just on another plane of existence, you know.
That's true.
But man, after listening to this though, I picked up one of Jazz's classical albums, and you know, we're going on a trip with the wife, and my wife, being a singer, is just a musical snob. You know, and I say that with the greatest love. But she's, if somebody's voice is at all like incorrect, she's like, this person sucks.
Yeah.
And I put on Jazz's classical album, and you know, she was listening. It was just playing in the car, and she goes, "What is this?" And I went, It's Jazz Coleman. I think his image was on the TV the other day, and you said he looked like Satan. And she goes, "This is really pretty. I love it."
Never judge a book.
Like Satan.
It was on my Amazon Prime. It had this image on my Apple TV where he like looks really angry, and she goes, "Who's that guy? He looks like Satan." And I said, "This is a classical. This is a composition by that guy you said looks like Satan." She goes, "Well, it's really pretty."
If a magic mushroom had a face, it would be Jazz Coleman.
Okay, so let me tell you guys about my bone to pick with Jazz Coleman. All right. So I crowdfunded his Killing Joke classical album. Mm. You guys are going to tell me this is my fault.
It's your fault, you idiot.
It already sounds like it is.
Yeah.
When you preempt it.
He's got money to throw away.
Yeah, he was doing like a live, like classical arrangement of Killing Joke stuff. And I was just wanted to see what it sounded like. And so I crowdfunded for the vinyl version, or if you know, whatever comes out.
Uh-huh.
And he did a few video updates, but it has been radio silence. It seems like for a few years on it. Like it seems, I kind of wonder if I, you know, it's gone into the ocean. But then I watched this documentary, and Jazz is talking about like, you know, trying to find islands in the ocean, and you know, hiding in Iceland, and I was going, I gave my money to an insane person.
you just realized, did you? It's all your fault. And I have no sympathy for you.
He seemed normal in the videos, the video updates.
Really?
Yeah.
He's like the...
So you got bamboozled.
Yeah, I did!
He's like the musical version of L. Ron Hubbard. Basically,
kind of, you know, it seemed like he was had his little church going, his like little Doomsday Apocalypse church, where he was dressing up like a priest and just basically reciting Alex Jones stuff, you know, like you know the world is ending, and you know there's chemtrails and
okay, so if the world is ending, why is he crowdfunding for?
Yeah, right?
Isn't that a red flag you should have seen?
I you know, if I had seen this documentary, I would have thought twice before I did. This was years ago. Yeah, this was like 4 or 5 years ago, I think. It seems like. And the thing is, too, is I crowdfunded Devin Townsend's Casualties of Cool record, and that came through with no problems. You know, I got
except
I got my
for the fact
code.
That it's fucking shit. But you
no, it's always... not. I love that album.
Oh, I can't stand that guy.
In fact, the night before the lockdown in Texas, the night before, I saw him live, and he had Shay Ami Dorval on stage with him, and they played some Casualties of Cool stuff, and it was awesome.
I would have started lockdown early, personally. that,
you like Devin, right, Daniel? You're a Devin fan.
Yeah, I like him. I don't get into all of it because sometimes it's just a little too much for me.
I agree.
I do like most of his Strapping stuff, though.
Strapping, it's hard. It's hard to argue with a lot of Strapping, you know.
But I enjoy watching because he's been doing these quarantine videos, basically kind of breaking down Strapping albums and just some of his albums. I'll talk about it for like an hour and a half. I'll listen to those. It's pretty interesting. And the guy is super talented. I like Devin.
Yeah. Yeah, it was my last concert, last ever.
Yeah, it's not the worst one, I guess. Yeah.
It was good, though. He played Disco Inferno. You know?
Oh, shit. Why not? It's Devin. I mean, he does weird shit, so.
Exactly. but I wanted to kind of ask what with Killing Joke, you know, they're a band that's had some phases, I think. And, like, the early stuff, it's sort of it's punk rock, but it's, like, pre-industrial. It's, like, proto-industrial.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, it kind of gets you into a trance almost.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get into the new wave era, you know, where it's a little heavier with Nighttime, but then like you have Brighter Than a Thousand Suns, which is more of a full on like new wave record.
But all those albums we'll be covering a lot of those albums next week. So,
yeah, we'll be covering a lot of them. But I just kind of wanted a broad strokes, like,
yeah,
you know, what are some of your? I'm not going to look at like I'm not talking about specific albums because we're going to talk about that on the next show. But like, what are your sort of overall thoughts on the? Have you guys listened to? Do you have? I know Daniel does, but Stu, do you have enough familiarity to like? Speak about like the different phases of the group.
Yeah, because the ones I've heard of were first one, second one, Fire Dancers, Nighttime. The self-titled from 2003, is it? I've heard that one.
Yeah.
And there was one from like 90 or 91 I've heard. I can't remember which one that was. I forgot the title. Yeah. It's like about 1990 or 91, around there, from memory.
I have a few that aren't available on Spotify or iTunes or anything like that, like Extremities and Other Filth and Democracy. You know, there's some that have
Democracy. I think it was the one I think I heard, Democracy, yeah.
Yeah, I've got that one on vinyl, but I don't see it on any of the streaming platforms, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's odd. Like, some things are like that with Spotify. They'll have the majority of a band's discography, but there'll be that one album that's just not on there. Obviously, legal rights issues.
Yeah, there are like holes if you go to their... If you go to the streaming sites, there's like holes in the Killing Joke discography, like big gaping ones.
Yeah.
Around. But you know, it seems like they have like their punk phase, their sort of new wave phase, and then like this phase where they just get heavier and heavier and heavier.
Oh,
more
intense. Yeah. By the time you get that self titled one of 2003, it's like, shit, this is a
one of my favorite ones. It was the Killing Joke album. The one from 2003 you're talking about, and that's when it really just got heavy.
Yeah.
But a band that they tour with a lot, that I think they're kind of similar to in certain ways. And Daniel, you're probably going to disagree with me because this is a band you don't like. But I want to get your thoughts on it. Is Tool?
Yeah,
they're a band that I think share a lot of similarities. They kind of both have these. They both their song, like, you know, Tool is obviously more prog influenced, more King Crimson influenced than Killing Joke. But I think they're both into the same sort of weird esoteric stuff, and both of their music kind of have this quality that kind of puts you into a trance. And I'm sort of curious as to, I was just sort of wondering, like, because I know, like, you make fun of Tool a lot on Facebook and stuff. So.
Tool fans are usually the problem. They want to tell you about it all the time.
they're self-labeled beautifully, aren't they?
Yeah, that's
true. The tools of Tool.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I mean, I'll agree with that. I'm not a Tool fan, but yeah, I can see those parallels there.
Yeah, because usually if somebody I know likes Tool, usually it's easy for me to sell them on Killing Joke. So I'm like, they toured with them, like, you got to check them out.
That makes sense. I mean, I can see somebody, you know, like a big Tool fan, you know, really getting into Killing Joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I'm not sure how Daniel's going to react to that one.
Nah, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. Tool still sucks, so.
So what did you think of the documentary overall, Stu? You know, what were some things you thought about it?
I liked it a lot. It was going to a whole new world of a band I knew nothing about, except save for about two or three albums I'd heard at that time by the time I got to the documentary. So it was a real eye-opener into the mind of Jez Coleman. And, I got to say, the 2.5 hours really flew by. It didn't drag at all. This is a pretty extensive documentary.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty long as far as rock docs go.
Considering, I watched the... it was like last year sometime, but I watched the L7 one, and it was like, God, this 1 hour and 25 minutes feels like fucking 5 hours. It was just awful. Doesn't help they're a shit band. I don't like them anymore, but I didn't mind L7 back in the 90s, you know, when they were the in thing, sort of, with in particular that Bricks Are Heavy album and the one after that. Oh, I forgot what it's fucking called. Yeah, from there on in, I really just didn't care much from at all. But anyway, yeah, getting back to Killing Joke. Yeah, this one really flew by, so it was good to be informed and get a lot of information with a decent running time that didn't drag.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it dragged either. I do think... You know, there are sections where I'm like, I kind of was going a little too deep into Jazz's sort of weird quasi-religious beliefs or his practice, the weird practices they had. And,
yeah.
But you know, I guess it's something that's important to understand where this group's coming from. But I thought it was funny. They had who's the guy who produced Nighttime? Chris.
Oh, Sangarides. Chris Sangarides.
No, not Chris Sangarides.
No? Yet. Oh, okay.
No. It's, what's his name? Hold on. I'll have it in a second. It's Chris Kimsey, I think. And he goes, they're telling me, you're working with Killing Joke, they're devil worshippers. Devil worshippers. But no, it is sort of, they do seem a little more drawn to that stuff than you would expect listening to their music, because you listen to like black metal or like you know, a lot of varieties of heavy metal, you would assume that these people are like into dark occult stuff, and some of them are, but some of them aren't, you know. But this band, I that was something I didn't see coming based on just on their music alone. I thought that they would be more drawn to, and they are drawn to this, but I thought that their stuff would be more political, because there's a lot of politics in their music. But I don't see like them fixating on that in interviews, which is kind of interesting. Because when you listen to their music, you know, I assumed that they would, that would be the thing they were obsessed with, not these esoteric systems, because, you know, they have songs about, and it's like, this is early Alex Jones stuff. They have songs about like FEMA camps. They have songs about, you know, like, you know, how bad the neocons are. And they have songs about, you know, they have like 9/11 truth stuff in their music, you know. So I always thought of them as more of a political band. So I don't know what your thoughts were, Daniel, if that surprised you at all.
Yeah, I wasn't really expecting all the magic and occult stuff necessarily. I was like you. I thought they would probably be more of like a political type thing, especially when you listen to like the 80s, you know, stuff through the 80s.
Yeah, 80s is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Got all the Cold War imagery, you know, Reagan, Thatcher, you know, the Soviet Union, you know.
Yeah. And I guess if you think about it, I guess they've kind of changed with the times as far as that, because now it seems like a lot of their stuff has got a little more maybe conspiracy kind of a feel to it. You know, with some of the stuff, you know, like talking about the Alex Jones stuff, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, crazy conspiracy stuff going on right now, it seems like, in the world. So yeah. It seems like they probably kind of, you know, maybe accidentally maybe followed kind of a, you know, how the world's going, you know, per decade. I was like you, I thought it was going to be, you know, kind of a, you know, a politics, you know, heavy thing, not so much occult stuff. It was almost felt like a Magic the Gathering commercial. It's just gonna be a bunch of nerds sitting around these cards, and I enjoyed the hell out of the documentary, but it wasn't exactly what I was expecting, but that's fine. You know, it was entertaining, you know, so
yeah. That's all that matters. Yeah, because that's something that took me by surprise. But I also, you know, like you said, they've gone more with the times conspiracy-wise. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of an indication, you know, they've obviously lost this early on, but I think the fact that the conspiracy stuff is more and more prevalent, I think it's an indication of a loss of faith in institutions and the public as a whole. Because, you know, I think you start to see that stuff more and more as faith in institutions crumbles. And I think they're sort of being who they are, they're on the cutting edge of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Because when, you know, I think that some of the ideas in their records from the past 20 years, I think would have seemed crazy when they started spouting them to most people. But I think these days you're going to see more people going, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These are totally in the mainstream. these ideas. Yes, of course. And I'm not, by the way, that's not me endorsing a lot of stuff, I'm just saying, you know, it seems like it's more and more and more in the zeitgeist. The more I listen to these records, you know, when I would first hear them, I was like, okay, that's a bit out there. But now I'm like, oh, I see more and more people saying that now, you know? So.
Yeah. 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 They're ahead of their time, literally.
Yeah. Stuart, what about you? Did you notice the political stuff in their music, or was that surprising to you?
No, not surprising at all. I mean, they're a pretty outspoken band, especially the very outspoken front man. So the politics side of it doesn't surprise me. It tends to take a very centrist look. It doesn't lean very left or very right.
No, it doesn't. That's what's very interesting about them is I think if you're on either side of the political spectrum, you can find something to enjoy or to agree with.
It's not like a Ministry where you know where it's going to lean very left or Ted Nugent where it's going to lean very right. So,
I see people on both sides of the aisle saying the stuff Jazz says. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that certainly helps them because you're not dividing an audience. You're not saying, well, I'm losing 50% of the audience by picking a side. It's like, well, I'm just going to take a centrist view of it and make up your own mind from there. You either agree or you disagree, which is the way it should be with everything, you know.
Yeah.
Make your own mind up.
It doesn't, you know, I don't know. It always felt, I think like, you know, Al Jurgensen, you brought up Ministry. He did like this trilogy of anti-Bush records. And while I'm not a fan of George W. Bush, to me, those albums feel like they stay current. They stay fixed in that era. And they don't hold much relevance today outside of if you want to go back and study that time period.
Yeah, it's kind of like stuck in a certain time. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know, you know, what the sales are like for Rio Grande Blood, you know, or The Last Sucker.
I would take a guess, not very good.
Yeah. And like,
but I'm not going to retire on that, I don't think.
No. No, actually, quite the opposite. I have to make more to get the money
but
back.
I think, and you know, I think those albums did really well when they came out, but I just, you know, is Al going to be playing those on tour? Is he going to be playing, you know, is he going to be playing like Just One Fix?
And nope. He's going to be playing the entire with Sympathy album from start to finish.
He needs to just do a With Sympathy.
He needs to make some peace with that thing finally and just, you know, just
and
accept
the do the fake accent.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm not an effigy. Oh, my God. That line from that song where he goes, I walk right into the room with me, more man, me, dad. It's like, shut up, Al.
What kind of Cuban accent is that?
Yes. Cuban Northern England accent.
Yeah.
God. boy, Al. But,
did anybody else notice the guy in the red hood?
The guy in the red.
Yeah, I made a note of it apparently it stood out enough to me to write it down. Guy in the red hood who looked like he was jerking off.
It was Batman.
two times I watched it, I was like, "What's the deal with this guy?" And it was just some. He never really came into the documentary again. He popped up and said some weird shit, and then he was gone, but he was making love to the camera, I felt like, with his eyes and shit, and it was kind of an uncomfortable moment in the documentary.
Oh, what? I'm trying to remember, because it's been a few weeks since I've watched it. I'm trying to remember that.
I don't know how you didn't pick up on that, because that was weird.
No, the documentary has those strange moments where interviewers get weird and they did the thing where we're only – it kind of reminded me a little bit of The Filth and the Fury because the Sex Pistols documentary.
Mm.
Because in The Filth and the Fury, we just film them in the shadows. You know, we don't see them when they're giving their talking head interviews. We don't actually see their faces.
Yeah, it was weird.
And in this documentary, I got Filth and the Fury vibes because when Jazz is talking, it's just a close up of his mouth.
Yeah.
Close up on him smoking.
Yeah, he's just smoking, and you know, we just see this close up of his mouth, and occasionally, like, he'll do an evil laugh into the camera, and then he'll talk about how he went down to South America. Because this planet was going to be over these crop circles at this time. And so he had to go and like spread Paul Raven's ashes into this river when this constellation was in the house of Saturn or something. Very odd.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Lunatic.
It sounds like a load of shit, right? I mean, this documentary, after seeing it, I believe that they believe all this stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I don't think that, I mean, you could easily think that, yeah, these guys are full of shit. And, but no, these guys mean it.
Well, they're
into it.
Well, that's one. I'm glad you said that, because so many bands and so many artists, this sort of thing is a pose, you know, whatever religious stuff they have going on. A lot of it's like, it's just something they're doing. Like for a lot of metal bands, like the Satan worship stuff, yeah. a lot of it's just an act, you know?
Oh yeah.
But with these guys, I saw, what was it? I was in some message board, and so we were talking about Killing Joke, and they were like, well, I don't know. I think those guys are serious, because they thought the world was going to end and they moved to Iceland because they were like, this is the only place where it's going to. I think they really believe this stuff. Like, this person was like, I don't think these guys are making it up.
No. That's what you get. That's what you get for hanging out in message boards.
Yeah. Well, it's like, this guy was like, their actions reflect, the stuff.
Like when they were recording in the pyramids, they talked about,
yeah,
it all.
Oh,
I was like, yeah, of course they are.
That sounds like something King Diamond would actually do.
No, yeah, except King Diamond, he's like in my neighborhood. He lives, so he's recording.
That's so strange that he lives near you. That's crazy.
I know, it's totally weird.
In Texas?
He lives in Plano. He lives like literally like I live in Dallas, and 5 minutes up the road is Plano. That's where King Diamond lives.
Weird.
And it's a suburb.
That's like how the Humongous lives about 20 minutes from my house.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Lord Humongous.
Oh, had I been living in the place I was at in 97 to 2000, he was 5 minutes down the road from where I was at. But now he's about 20 minutes away.
Like, there's an episode of Metal Evolution where Sam Dunn goes to King Diamond's house, and it just looks like a Dallas suburb house, you know. And it doesn't look anything like.
It looks like your old place.
Danzig's house.
It looks like your old place, Hunter, from 2015.
Yeah, actually, it kind of does. Mm. Except it's not a duplex; it's just one house. But yeah, it just looks like a typical Dallas suburban house, you know, sort of brown brick. And you know, it's a far cry from in the "Give Me Your Soul, Please" album, where King Diamond describes living on a hill with his cat and like overlooking a lake. And
so you're the one person who heard that album. Okay,
I'm the only one. Yeah, I think that was the last record.
It was
his last full.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
give
me my time back, please, is what it should have been called.
But he like had open heart. He started touring again, and then he got open heart surgery, and
yeah,
he was doing a lot of shows of Abigail, where he was just doing the Abigail record. But
how old is he now?
Oh gosh.
62, I think. 61?
64.
Oh, wow.
He's a year younger than my dad.
So King Diamond could be your dad.
Yeah, my dad's King Diamond's age-ish.
And he tells you off, he screams your name and puts a curse on you.
I walk in the room. When I went over to their house for dinner last night, he went, "Hunter, welcome home."
It was grandma there in a chair in the corner.
Let me help you into the chair. Grandma. That was one of the funniest things in Clerks 2, was they kept doing these King Diamond jokes.
Yeah. Oh, that's what got that song more popular than what it really was.
Yeah, like they there's the kid who's super innocent, and Jay and Bob are running, screaming King Diamond lyrics at him.
That was
Kevin Smith made funny movies.
I know. Oh man, his Jay and Silent Bob reboot was so bad.
It was an inside joke inside of an inside joke. It was
which
pretty
is,
much
which
all
which is not good. Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah. I didn't have high hopes when I went to that one, but I was like, yeah, he's just making fun of all this stuff.
Yeah.
He's already done that a few times.
I remember that's how I felt when I saw Austin Powers Goldmember. You know, where they were just redoing, like, the
Keep tagging their old jokes constantly.
Yeah,
that was funny 2 movies ago.
And then they have, like, Ozzy Osbourne making fun of them for rehashing their jokes, and I'm like, that doesn't make it okay. just because you pointed it out doesn't mean you're allowed to do it.
The worst thing in that film, as I said when I watched it, was Jason Mewes' fake teeth. I just couldn't get past it.
They got Steve Harvey teeth now.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah.
Steve Harvey teeth!
You know what it's all about. Yeah, Steve. Nobody has teeth like that naturally. Come on.
Oh, no. No, man, Jason Mewes. You could just... The thing about Jason Mewes is you look at him and you hear him, and you can just hear the toll of the drugs. Everything. It's so dark.
His face is kind of aged, you know, the way an ex junkie, face would look.
Actually, yes. Kevin Smith looks younger. Kevin Smith looks younger than Jason Mewes in that film.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and Kevin Smith's weird because he's lost all the weight and he's like vegan now and stuff.
Hmm. Yeah. But he looks well. I mean,
it's good for him because he lost. Which good for him because he had a heart attack, you know. So
yeah,
you know, more power to him. It's just weird seeing him skinny, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny how these guys change as they get older.
Yep.
Sure. John was here, he'd be like, "Ah, he's a fat slob."
You forgot to do a John impression.
Would have died.
Fuck that fat slob.
No. And now he only needs one airplane seat. So.
Oh, man, that was so funny when he got kicked off of the Southwest airline for being too fat to fly. And he did like 5 podcasts about it, like about how they humiliated him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That should be red flag right there to lose some weight, I think. When you got to get kicked off.
I think he... It was the heart attack that he said, you know, sort of told him to wake up.
Yeah, probably the heart attack having to buy a second seat he didn't need.
Well, even after that, he was, you know, it took him a while to lose weight.
And I don't know if he broke a toilet or not, like, was it John Popper or whatever his name is from?
It's
an awful band.
Blues Traveler.
Yeah.
You know,
that's another weird looking guy to see, you know, not fat like that anymore.
He's not fat anymore?
No, well, he was, and I saw him on some podcast a couple years ago for some reason. But yeah, he lost a bunch of weight.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's skinny now.
Same, like,
the band still blows.
Like,
but he lost weight.
It's like when you look at John Goodman these days and Al Sharpton, you think, fuck. What happened?
Al Sharpton lost all that weight, but none of it out of his head.
Yeah.
No.
It's all still, the head is still inflated. Man, John Popper, that's so weird. Just looking at these pictures of him. I just know him as the fat guy who would go on SNL and like sing kind of forgettable Dave Matthews tier stuff, you know?
Yeah.
They're one of those bands, like one of those kind of, There's this 90s genre of jam band, like Blues Traveler,
Spin Doctors.
What was it? Blind Melon. Dave Matthews Band. You have to understand, growing up in Dallas, Dave Matthews Band was like a plague, you know?
Oh, boy.
That was all like people in my age group listen to, and you have to understand that because of that, I thought that music was just bad in general.
It is
for a while.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because that's all I was exposed to. And someone played Metallica for me, and I went, "Oh!" And they played me Ennio Morricone and you know, stuff like that. I was like, okay, I guess music's all right.
I guess I can listen. It's going to be okay. There's better music out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
Dave Matthews Band can ruin everything for everyone.
Not the living hell that Dave Matthews is. It's a lot of better stuff out there.
It was weird though. Anybody, like, you got their CD wallet, Dave Matthews. Here's the one with the carousel on the cover. Here's the one with the girl covering up her boobs in the artsy black and white photo. Here's, you know, oh man, just,
you got to find new friends when you find those CDs.
Yeah, you won't believe me. It's cool, you know. Yeah.
It was music for basic bitches before that was really a term.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right.
And it still is.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's funny, though, because, like, I think, you know, Spotify has sort of removed that social thing where you had to look at someone's collection and you could kind of size them up based on what they had. Yeah, you could sit there and go, okay, it's kind of cool. Or go like, oh, man, it's nuts. You know, what are you doing with this album? You know, there would always be the one in there where it's like you'd have to explain it.
That's a bit like going through your Discogs collection. Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what? If I want a good laugh, I'll just go through Hunter's Disco collection.
Yeah. Right. See what kind of dumb stuff I have.
Especially on
vinyl. I got that box, Daniel, the one that came out recently.
Which one?
The Typo Negative box.
Oh, yeah. I remember you sent me a picture of that. Yeah. Yeah. That thing's pretty nice.
Ah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to, but I just kind of sat on my money and didn't know.
Yeah.
I already got everything anyway, you know, just loose CDs and stuff.
Yeah.
I did try to go find their After Dark video because I've got it on VHS, but I thought they came out with it on a DVD a while back, and you can find it on eBay for like $250. I'm not sure what that's about. I guess I'll be watching my VHS copy.
You can always watch that DVD we'd always watch where Pete's got the big Coke booger hanging out of his nose.
Oh, yeah, the one at the Walking Festival. I love that one.
Yeah,
that one's a shit. He's got the biggest Coke booger ever. It's just a snowball right in his face.
Him and Neil Young in The Last Waltz, two biggest live music Coke boogers.
Yeah, they're just saving that shit for later, man.
Yeah. I read about, like, Pete Steele. It was like 3 bottles of wine before the show and 3 bottles after. I'm just like, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
That's inhuman to me.
I can't believe he's dead.
Yeah! No wonder he died.
He was gigantic and he treated his heart like shit.
As opposed to Jazz Coleman, who will live forever.
Yeah, well, I hope so. The world needs somebody like that, I think.
Which means
else feel a little less crazy.
He'll live forever, which means in 2 weeks he'll be dead. He'll be like the MC death.
No, John's not here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. John's the death master, isn't he? Yeah.
John's the guy who talks about people and then they die. You know?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a terrifying superpower. Wish I had that one.
You know, they were supposed to come play. They were going to play at a venue by my house back when they were touring for Pylon.
I think I remember you telling me that because I was jealous.
I think I even was like, hey, you want to come up and go to the show?
Yeah.
And something going on, like, I can't make it. But they ended up canceling the show. And I was at a record store, you know, and this – talking to this guy, and he goes, yeah, man. He goes, they cancel shows a lot. He said they've canceled a few times in Dallas. And I kind of wonder about that, you know.
Huh.
Oh, that's like the Reverend Horton Heat. They're actually banned forever from coming here because they've booked and canceled about 4 or 5 times, and promoters said, fuck off. You're never coming back.
Really?
Never.
That's interesting.
Reverend Horton Heat is banned forever, and so is... that woman who was big in the 90s, PJ Harvey, Polly Jean Harvey.
Oh, really?
Band gone.
Why is that?
Again, same thing. Just book a tour, people buy the tickets, she cancels. Repeat. So they said bye.
Eventually, they just go like, "We're never doing business with you."
I think Megadeth got very, very close to that as well. From what I heard, was they did it a few times. I actually had prime seats for Megadeth in 1990-91 for the Rust in Peace thing cancelled. Like, you
sounds like Guns N' Roses probably wouldn't do very well there then.
No, they actually got a law changed. They were that bad when they got here in 2006 or something like that. It wasn't them directly. It was what happened at the show where people were just collapsing from dehydrating. So now they have to give out free water at shows because they were charging like $7 for a bottle of water.
So it was just for waiting for him to decide to come on. The typical Axl thing?
Yeah, no, it was just, I think throughout the whole show, it was one of those days where it was just ridiculously hot here, and yeah, they probably waited like 6 hours for that fucking fat idiot to get on stage, and yeah.
Speaking of, I just saw some tour for the Guns N' Roses 2021 tour Down Under.
Stuart. Yeah. Oh, really? I'll be sick that day. I'm like, God.
No. I just want you to see this artwork because I want your reaction to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm sending this in Facebook Messenger right now.
All right. I saw them twice on the Appetite for Destruction tour, so I'm fine with that.
Just get ready for this. I just sent it to you in Facebook.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I have to get the phone.
This to Danny too.
You boys do what you do best and talk. I'll be back in a minute.
Just you know
what the fuck. Yeah, that Paul Hogan, that's a national treasure right there.
The art is
that's fucking magical right there. I love that. That is so awful.
Yeah, very, very good. Guns N' Roses Down Under. Yeah.
Okay. It's the skeleton of Paul Hogan ripping the Australian flag in half like the Crocodile Dundee poster where he's coming out of the grass.
Yep.
God, that is good. Is that a joke? Is that real?
My friend posted it. He's making fun of it. He's going, this is the worst. He goes, crikey, what kind of shit else? Garbage is this? Looks like it was done in MS out of paint.
It was, yeah.
He didn't even try.
Yeah, garbage.
Totally
garbage. Just like that Paul Hogan latest bloody Crocodile film, or it was called Crocodile Dundee with...
Kind of like the exquisite Mr. Dundee or something, the exceptional Mr. Dundee.
Oh, it's god awful.
No, that okay, so it is real. It's on Guns N' Roses Twitter. So
Jesus.
That's their right. Work.
That is awful.
Yeah, they're playing Australia and New Zealand.
They didn't even try.
Yeah. It's no wonder Izzy Stradlin's like, fuck this band. I'm doing nothing to do with it. Yeah, the only member
that's
in my book.
That's one of the worst tour posters I've ever seen in my
the
life.
The only member in my book worth a shit. Izzy Stradlin was the only member worth a shit in that band. All the rest were garbage.
No, I liked his. Some of his solo records I've liked quite a bit.
Oh, that one, that Juju Hounds one, I really like a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good album. Well, wrap I don't this know, up, guys. Boys. Yeah, let's wrap this up. So, Stuart, you know, you picked this one. What are some of your final thoughts on Death and Resurrection Show?
Worth a watch. Definitely, even if you know nothing about them, don't worry. I did not either. And they are a very interesting band, and you'll learn more about them next week in Rock Month Week 2. And I will give this a good solid 7.5.
Yeah, Daniel, what about you?
Yeah, I highly recommend it. You know, like you said, you don't have to really know much about the band to, you know, watch this. It, you know, kind of gives you an insight to them, whether you wanted to really know it or not. And it's fun. You know, yeah, I'll give it a solid 8. It's definitely worth it. Pack a bowl and strap in.
I would say I would recommend it, but I would say listen to some of their music first, just to get some familiarity.
Yeah.
But I would give it a 7 out of 10. Again, I think it's a little heavy on the esoteric and the occult, but it's surprising nonetheless. And
it's not as for me anyway. It wasn't quite as much about music as I was hoping it was, but you know, it was still good. Still,
yeah. Like it does, I think, have some good personality profiles on the musicians, like Paul Raven, you know, and Youth. And I really like the bit on Geordie where they talk about how he's the most British guy ever. In fact, he's so British. He doesn't even live in Britain. He lives in Prague because Britain's not British enough anymore. He's the sort of guy who's so British. He seems like the sort of person who would be smoking a cigarette and drinking a gin in a bomber going right way over the target.
Yeah, directly.
You know, there's a lot of great memorable little moments in that. And they do go into little things like how he gets his guitar sound. And, cause you know, I think one of the underrated, you know, we talk about jazz a lot, and his voice, but Geordie's guitar tone is such a big part of that band sound.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of whatever the hell that guitar tone is. And, you know, it's, I think he's probably been using that same guitar since the beginning.
Yeah, it just...
And it's a crazy sound. I love the way it sounds.
Yeah, it's just that you can see why Jimmy Page is a fan. Because it just, he just gets some sort of... There's something otherworldly about Geordie's guitar sound. And, you know, yeah, it's...
Definitely.
And, Absolutely. And, so, you know, it does a lot of stuff like that well. So, you know, recommended. But next time we've each picked a few albums, we're going to talk about them. So, you know, it's going to be really exciting. Very excited to talk, get more into the music specifically of Killing Joke.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Stu, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just want to bring up a technical piece of information. I got given a CD player by my brother last night. The original CD player that we got from Dad in 89, and it still works like a treat.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Vintage.
Yeah, they knew how to build them back then. The thing was as well, lucky with my brother, he keeps everything immaculate. Like, it's like off the showroom floor, even after 30-something years of owning it. So, yeah, plugged that sucker in just before we recorded today and tried out a few CDs, compared it up against the Oppo Blu-ray player I got, which is not one of those cheap-ass ones, it's one of the higher-end ones, and stands shoulder-to-shoulder with it in sound. So if you ever see a CD player out there cheap, like 20 or 30 bucks, do yourself a favor, I reckon you might be pleasantly surprised how good they can still sound.
Yeah, I've still got a stack of... I still have a lot of CDs, and you know what, Stu? You can't listen to vinyl in your car.
No, you cannot. No.
You know, if I want to take it with me.
That's right.
CDs, way to go. In fact, I'm looking at my copy of Killing Joke's Pandemonium on CD right now. I need to pull that out and put it in my car so I can blast it.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Such a good album. Any parting thoughts, Daniel?
Yeah, just appreciate y'all having me on to talk about this. It's been fun, and yeah, thanks again.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, if that's all, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
I'll say
mahalo.
Middle peak. Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.